This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
710, Jonathan Carl, lead reporter individual situation for ABC News. And the mess that has happened since the death of Antonin Scalia this weekend, the blog that I wrote this weekend, which will be up shortly here, will be laid out in detail later in the show as well. The bottom line is the President of the United States has a job to do, a constitutionally mandated job to do, and he needs to do it. And the Republicans can vote either up or down, but this discussion of waiting a year to fill a Supreme Court position is absolutely ridiculous. It's embarrassing and needs to stop. All right, at 6:11, before we get to Paul Conrad, and Paul starts the week with us, let me set up the rest of the show. Dr. Kevin Moslater, and Doc had a good idea. We thought we'd wrap up Valentine's Day and talk about all of your ingestion of candy and wine over the weekend. And, you know, I'm assuming most of you got lucky. I hope you did. William Shatner after 8, Dean Richards as well, Hawkopedia later, Coach Q, Marissa Bailey from CBS2, a very nice woman, and she's coming on solely for the reason to mock me, because Andre did fine, but I was a big loser and finished last in the celebrity text contest at the auto show.
You know, in your defense, though, you were talking with the listeners. You were
preoccupied I just sucked.
By the people. Okay.
Yeah, I just sucked.
A little bit.
I didn't care that much, you know? I gotta say, I phoned it in. I phoned my texting in. And Paul Coit after 9:30, my daughter Amy had a terrific idea this weekend. If Trump continues to maintain his lead, and in some sort of bizarre world, if Trump or Cruz are elected, we have to leave.
Oh, like just leave America?
Yeah, so Amy had a good idea. If we say we're sorry, would England take us back? So I'm going to bring that up to Paul Coit and see what the return requirements might be.
But we would still have to. Would we somehow be in charge of England?
No, like no,
they
no,
would
no.
take us back
no,
and
no,
give
no,
us
no.
power again.
No, it'd be another revolution at some point. All right, do you have Paul Coit's music? Go ahead and hit it if you do.
I have Paul Conrad's music.
What did I say, Paul Coit? Do you have Paul McCartney music? How about Paul Prudhomme? Is he dead now, the chef, Paul Prudhomme? Paul Conrad joins us now.
Hello.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. All right. Good talking to you. I got to go.
Well, we both know that's not true because, frankly, you don't have that much
I'm
to do.
I'm sitting around staring at myself.
All right, now I have a question for you, a legitimate question about the weather.
All right, I probably don't have an answer, but go ahead.
I don't think that's true because you're a meteorologist.
All right, what do you want to know?
Well, do you have the sticker or are you an actual meteorologist?
I got all my training in the dance school in Geneva, the International School of Dance.
So you know what you're talking about.
I have so much information in my head, it scares me.
All right. So it's winter all weekend, right?
I mean,
super cold on Saturday.
Yep.
Yesterday we had the 2 or 3 inches of snow,
right.
But it was nasty all day.
Yep.
Today it's cold, it's wintry.
Yeah.
But on Friday,
right.
It's going to be what?
I think it's going to be like 55 degrees.
Right. So what are we talking about here? So my question is winter over?
No. This is the problem with being in Chicago. It's like you start thinking, all right, if I can get through February,
yeah.
Things turn around in March.
Yeah.
But typically, March blows also, right? Like, it's a little bit better, but it's not what you're wanting for. And you get, like, halfway through, and then we get hit with another 6-inch snowstorm, and then you're really ready to start running out into traffic.
Yeah, so you're saying blows in the meteorological way,
right.
But
yeah,
also like, in the sucks way.
Yes, it's a 2-for-1 word kind of there.
All right, so this is just a temporary reprieve on Friday.
It gives us a little bit of hope is what it does, right? It reminds us that spring is coming. Like, it'll be really a nice weekend. Like, Friday, I think 55, Saturday, what did I put down, 48 with sunshine, and then 44 on Sunday, so it's really nice still. You know, average high is about 34, 35 degrees. So we're going to be up above it.
But I heard Mike Hammernick,
yeah.
Which, by the way, cannot be his real name.
No, he's made that one up also. No. I don't know.
His real name is like Finsterwald
right.
or something.
It's unbelievable.
Mike Hammernick. I heard Mike Hammernick tell Dean Richards yesterday that we get through this cold snap.
Yeah.
The snow's not over, but the cold likely is.
Yeah. Well,
do you agree with that or disagree?
The two-week outlook, which takes us to the end of February, keeps us above average, which is great.
Well, that's good. But do you agree that the mid-February is your break point for really super cold weather?
I still feel like we can get a blast of some Arctic air down here.
Okay.
It's a possibility. I'm not willing to rule anything out. I get one day, like I probably will have tomorrow wrong. So my confidence in getting 15 to 30 days right, that's like impossible.
So you're saying Mike Hamernick doesn't know what he's talking about?
He does. He's the smartest.
He's good.
He is brilliant.
So you're saying you don't know what you're talking
about? I have no idea what I'm talking
about. All right, as long as we're clear.
Yep.
All right, so 56 on Friday.
55.
And 55 on Friday.
Let's care about the details.
Not
here.
Crazy.
55. 56 55
on
like
Friday.
Crazy.
And then mid-40s on the weekend.
Yeah, 48 Saturday.
Wow.
Like, that's bikini weather. And then 44 on Sunday.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we made it through some rough patches, you know.
Reminds
it might be time for a song.
What, a little joke, a little dance, a little seltzer down my pants? One of those kind of deals?
Yeah, that'd be nice. You got it in you?
Well, Andre has a follow-up question for you. If you're follow-ups.
Paul, you have a hello from a gentleman who I was working for you guys on Saturday covering the frigid temperature.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just going out. There was some problems with the train. The signals were down at 75th and Exchange.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a guy kind of fixing those. He came over and said, Channel 9? He said, tell Paul Conrad that George said hi.
All right, George. Thank you, George.
Yeah, big fan of yours.
Big fan.
See, that covers a lot of people because there's a lot of people named George. Even people who didn't want to say hi have now said hi.
They're all
George.
Great. Dave Ennett has a follow-up question as well, if you're taking follow-ups.
All right. I'll take one. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I was not working yesterday, but somebody came up to me and said, do you work at Channel 9?
Yeah, yeah.
And could you say hi to Paul for me?
Yeah.
And his I know this is weird.
His
name was George.
Cut it out. This is the beauty of America, right?
The same guy.
Well, here's a crazy thing.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
I didn't do anything for Channel 9. Didn't watch Channel 9
all
weekend.
Right.
Never met a guy
thanks.
Named George, and no one said hi to him.
I have an uncle named George.
Yeah, there's a guy who works here whose name is George.
Check with Kevin. You know anybody named George?
George from Gale Street Inn.
Oh, yeah. And it's George Washington's birthday.
It is.
Or something like that.
I knew if we talk long enough, we could crash and burn this segment.
Yeah.
All right, buddy, you got to go do
all right,
TV.
I got important things to do. Well, sometimes when I leave this segment, I feel like I am really dumb. Like, not that you're projecting anything onto me, but I finish up, I'm like, I am an idiot. I have done nothing to help myself out.
Well, listen, you got to understand, I love you. You're one of my best friends, but you are dumb.
Yeah.
All right, talk to you later. It's 6:18. Let's get your traffic. Mary's here with your WGN Traffic Trouble Spot. I mean, there's so much political news to talk about. It's crazy. We'll get into the full Scalia after 7 o'clock. The full Scalia. Got to ask yourself, though, who in their right mind would want to be president at this point? And who in their right mind would want to be the nominee chosen by the president when the circular firing squad that the Republican Party has become can't wait to get in front of a microphone to say, we're not going to approve any candidate that Barack Obama puts up. There's already been names that have been forwarded from the D.C. Circuit Court, which is, I'd have to check with Karen Conti on this, but I think you can make the argument that it's probably the second most powerful court in the country. Mm-hmm. But the D.C. Circuit Court has one or two judges in play who were unanimously approved by the Senate in the last 5 years. In other words, if either one of those, and they're both eminently qualified for the Supreme Court, if either one of those people, I don't have their names in front of me, but if either one of those people were nominated, the Senate would have to say, we're not going to take a vote on this, or we're going to take a vote on this, but we're going to turn them down. And when the question comes up, well, why were they okay 2 years ago and they're not okay now? The only truthful answer would be because Barack Obama suggested them.
It's absolutely insane that anybody, that Democrat or Republican, but specifically the Republicans, would think that it's okay to wait 1 year, because that's what it would be before the next president is inaugurated.
Could be over a year.
Minimum 1 year, minimum.
Yeah.
Until, and then the Supreme Court is going to sit one justice short because of politics. That's insane to think.
And Marco Rubio, who becomes a little nuttier every time I see him, Marco Rubio this weekend, literally in the same conversation. Keep in mind that Antonin Scalia was what's referred to as an originalist. He believes that the Constitution, or believed that the Constitution, should be judged as it was written at the time it was written. That the text matters, that the words matter. So keep that in mind when you hear Marco Rubio talk about we need another Scalia, we need to honor Scalia, and then says, and Barack Obama can't name the next person. What does it say in the Constitution? That the president has to put forth the nominee and the Senate has to approve the nominee. You're saying two different things in the same sentence. And the Republican Party has the votes to decline a nominee. Let the process run its course. That's it.
There's a great article online, and our friend David Axelrod wrote it right after Scalia. Everyone had found out that Scalia had passed over the weekend, and David Axelrod wrote a story. And, of course, he's a political insider, and he had a conversation with Scalia before Elena Kagan was nominated. And Scalia and Elena Kagan, very vastly different viewpoints, very different sides of the political spectrum, but they were very good friends. They were sparring partners, if you will. And Scalia said to Axelrod, I hope he sends us Kagan.
Because he liked Kagan.
Yeah, because, you know.
Well, he and Ginsburg used to hang out. Ginsburg, yeah. Little Ruth Ginsburg, you know, all 84 pounds of her and big old Antonin Scalia. They couldn't have looked more different. They couldn't have been more different. And she said this weekend, we were best buddies.
Yeah, they shared completely different political ideologies.
And by the way, the Democrats, you know, if the Democrats have any sense, they'll just shut up. Because the Democrats have no high ground to stand on in this. Because if the situation were reversed, the Democrats would be saying the same thing. They would be telling a Republican president to wait. That's how ass backwards and upside down Washington has become. But you cannot... It's an absolute breach of the Constitution, as it's written, to have the president wait a year. You know, tough break, guys. And you know, I wrote this in the blog that I mentioned. You know who was the most honest this weekend? Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was honest? What? Hillary Clinton's the one that said elections have consequences. Well, that's right. They do. Obama won in 2012. He's the president. The presidency doesn't end until next January. So because of that, he gets to make the choice. If you don't like it, vote him out.
Completely. It's the power of the incumbent, the power of the president.
I feel like all of Springfield and Congress could just switch places and none of us would notice because they're the same bunch of boobs. By the way, Kirk and Durbin scheduled to appear this week to address the Senate piece of this. And Jonathan Carl from ABC News this morning after 7. It says, regardless of whose side you're on this, just take your own politics out of it for a second. And you try to explain to me, to you, to anyone else, how this makes sense, how waiting makes sense.
You know, actually, this would be a perfect time for the Republican Party or any dissenters to come together and say, you know, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to just approve.
Just let
the
court, just let it happen. Let it happen. Meanwhile, the debate Saturday night was a train wreck. Trump never looked less presidential. Trump was losing his mind. You know, and guys like Kasich and Bush, well, Bush to a lesser extent because he mixed it up with him. But Kasich, you know, I think I tweeted this out Saturday. Kasich's got all the electricity of an Amish farm. You know, for him to be able to be noticed is a little difficult. But he's actually the grown-up in the room who actually has something to say. I don't know. You know, on most election years, you can take all the candidates, you put them in a blender, and if you could blend them all together and get something out, you go, well, there's your candidate. Because if we take the strength of all of them, we'd find enough strengths that would make it work. I'm not sure you could take all the Democrats and all the Republicans and find one legitimate presidential candidate at this point. But old smiling, quiet, dorky John seems to be the guy so far. Though at this point, I'm not endorsing for president, Dave Emmett.
I don't want it.
Dave, we need you now. It's 6:28. We got to take a break. We'll come back, get the big story on Dr. Kevin Most. It's Monday. Dr. Most on your health coming up too on 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight, both my neck and arms were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call. The WGN Hotline,
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now. He's from Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Moose right now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, impact every day. Dr. Kevin Moose joins us. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Sounds good. You're all over your cold. You sound terrific.
Yeah, sound much better. Feel much better.
Okay. Did you have a nice Valentine's Day?
Well, you know, I watched golf. I didn't watch the basketball game, so I watched a little golf. So, yeah, it was a nice Valentine's weekend. We had some fun.
Good. And I'm fine, too. Thanks for asking. No, it's all about you, obviously. So let's move on here to Scalia before we get to the Valentine's Day stuff. We hear natural causes all the time. It seems like this is where this is headed. You know, without an autopsy, the diagnosis of a heart attack seems to be media-driven. Through people who are on the scene who have seen that kind of thing before. But first off, there's no reason to suspect anything other than the man was 79, probably not in great health, and he had a heart attack.
Yeah, like you said, natural causes, you always hear that. And the Center for Disease Controls, we track deaths across this country, and we break them down into two major causes, either natural causes or non-natural, which is suicide, homicide, and accidents. So 93% of the people in this country die from natural causes. Now, when you look at him, where it's a natural cause, he wasn't in the hospital, he wasn't ill as far as we know. Yeah, it's probably going to be either a heart attack or a fatal arrhythmia where the heart's not really attacked, but it just goes into a bad pumping function and can't pump, and he dies from that. Or he had a massive stroke. Or a large pulmonary embolism. I would say those are probably the top ones that probably caused his death.
Yeah, we know he wasn't feeling well when he went to bed. And before a heart attack, you have those sort of pre-symptoms, don't you?
Yes, you do. Often you have kind of that, oh, I just don't feel right. I just don't feel good, you know. And it's that those are the signs, some of those signs of pre-heart attack warnings is if you're not really feeling right. You know, and if somebody questioned him further, who knows? He may have gotten some care, but sometimes they say, you know, I'm just going to go to sleep. I'm going to go in early today.
The natural causes thing, though, it's important to know that distinction because I'd never heard it explained like you just explained it. Because we'll hear 30-year-old. 30-year-old dies, and eventually the diagnosis is natural cause. You go, well, how can it be natural that a 30-year-old dies? But it doesn't mean the same as we in the non-medical community would define it.
Correct. You know, unless they're going to do an autopsy on him, we'll never know exactly what it is. We can bet, we can say, boy, it's probably one of these three because that happens most often in somebody who is well. But it really is a tracking mechanism to find out, you know, how many suicides do we have in this country? How many homicides? How many accidental deaths do we have from drug overdoses, car accidents, et cetera? And then everyone else, cancer, heart disease, everyone else falls into that other bucket of natural causes.
So if something went biologically wrong with the individual, there's your natural causes.
Yeah, it's usually going to be, like I said, it's going to be lungs, heart, or brain. That's going to be, you're not going to die overnight of kidney failure. You're not going to die overnight of diabetes, but those are the ones that can take your life unexpectedly.
Doc, this may be kind of a crazy question, but would natural causes be hereditary too? In other words, if your grandmother natural causes, your mother natural causes, or does that have nothing to do with it?
No, it can, because it gets down to that cause of death. So when you say hereditary, it's usually hereditary due to something else. In other words, some body part is failing. Heart disease runs rampant in a lot of people's family. That's a hereditary reason, but it would be natural causes as well.
All right, so that's the Scalia portion of the story. And what we know now is that the replacement part of the argument is going to go on for a while. And this is maybe not necessarily a medical discussion, but with the average age of death going up every year, I think, you know, a few years ago it used to be men died at 77, women died at 79. I think it's into its 80s now, isn't it?
Yeah, we're just creeping right up to 80 and for men and over 80 for women. Yep.
So I would think that part of this discussion at some point has to be about this lifetime. And again, this is a constitutional change if there were ever to change. This lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, because unless you resign or retire, the only way out is die. And, you know, if we all get to a certain point where we're not as effective at our job as we used to be, you can make the argument that maybe some of these justices need to tap out before, you know, they are done.
I agree, Steve. You know, we have that in pilots right now, right? We have a mandatory retirement age for pilots. I can tell you in the medical field, it's something we look at very closely now. At what time do you lose a little speed off that fastball? And boy, maybe you shouldn't be practicing. And that's something we deal with every day. And again, even in the Supreme Court, where they're making decisions that are going to impact generations to come, perhaps we need to look at their cognitive skills. These are brilliant people, but we all know that as we age, we lose some of our cognitive abilities and probably should take a look at that just as we do in pilots and in physicians.
Yeah, and to be honest, like so many things, when the Constitution was written, the founding fathers were not thinking about the average age of people dying at 80, you know, because I would suppose at that point in America, people were probably dying at 60 or 50.
Yeah, it probably was more, it was probably in the 50s, maybe even the high 40s, to be honest with you.
Right. So, you know, a lifetime appointment meant you'd certainly be within your, you know, the same cognitive abilities that you had when you were appointed. So those are longer form discussions, but I think that takes care of the medical side. Now I'll take the pressure off you and let you talk about candy and booze when we come back. Stand by for that. More with Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Traffic with Mary. What are the trouble spots now? Dr. Kevin Most from Northwestern Medicine. Man, it's a big deal for Northwestern Medicine and Central DuPage Hospital and all the other affiliates to get together. But the merger now is all complete and everybody's happy?
Well, it's kind of complete. You know, we're just adding a little bit more. We just added Kish Health, Kishwaukee Hospital out in DeKalb.
And it's a great hospital.
Yeah, and we'll be adding Marion Joy to our team as well here in the next about a month. So
it continues to grow.
Continues to grow, and we're trying to do balanced growth. We're having, you know, a lot of health systems in Chicago. We have a little bit of a different strategy, so we'll see. I think we're making an impact out here. I think you're starting to see more services that people would have gone downtown for, and now we're able to get those in the suburbs without having to travel, and we still have the great tertiary care center downtown that we can send patients to, and some great minds down at Northwestern, that's for sure.
Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. All right, so we just got off Valentine's Day weekend. Is the, you know, we seem like we get medical tests all the time that say one thing and then they're contradicted 6 months or a year later. But the old red wine, dark chocolate thing seems to be holding up, huh?
It really does. And, you know, like you said, it's Valentine's Day and people probably have a box of chocolates there sitting in front of them. And boy, there's little guilt there eating them. But really, when you look at both those foods, I'll call them, they both have a very interesting history, and they both have very good health-related issues, as well as you use them in moderation.
In moderation, meaning how much dark chocolate,
you
how much wine?
Can't eat the whole box.
A box and a bottle.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, right?
I was waiting to see which one would jump in first.
All three of us.
Or Andrea.
Well, Dave, you're the hooch expert on this.
No, see, why do you say?
Well, because it's true. So, Dave, you know, would go through a bottle of red wine, but he's still healthy.
Yeah, well, we don't want people to go through quite a bottle of red wine.
That was a little bit of an exaggeration, Doc, but yeah, I think you did say on this program that there are health benefits from it.
Absolutely. Especially red wine. Not so much white wine, but especially red wine. And when you say how much, 1 to 2 glasses a day. I wouldn't go above that. You know, if you want to stay off of the wine for a day or two, that's fine. But you do see benefits at 1 to 2 glasses a day. And for chocolate, 1 or 2 medium-sized dark chocolate candy bars a day will also give you some great health benefits.
What is a medium-sized dark chocolate candy bar? How big?
It's like the one Doc Emmerich brought you last week.
Yeah, by the way, Doc Emmerich brought in a 5-pound Hershey bar.
Yeah, that's not exactly it.
Yeah, because 2 of those would be a lot.
Correct.
So how many of those little bite-sized Snickers ones?
Well, no, we're talking about dark chocolate. We're talking about dark chocolate. You said medium-sized, so how big is it?
Yeah, you know, they say 100 grams, so I'm trying to think about what the size would be.
Well, if you look at a Hershey bar, like a standard Hershey bar, like half the size of that?
Yeah, that flat, normal Hershey bar, half of that. So 1 of those a day would be perfect for you.
But if you had 2, you'd be okay.
You would, as long as you were, as long as you were doing some exercising as well.
All right, so I could live with that. Yeah. I could live with those restrictions. You know, and Dave's drinking all the wine, so that's not going to
be
a problem.
Well, but remember, I went a month without drinking any because the month of January, we all gave something up.
Yeah, but you were so angry, so cranky that
whole month. I wasn't cranky, but I missed those benefits that Doc Most just described.
Yeah. Daddy needs his benefits! So congratulations, Doc. Once again, you've tried to drive us down a healthy path, and we've driven the car right off the road. But I think the message is clear. Moderation. The same thing our grandmothers told us, right?
Yeah. And let's just go. I mean, I think the thing that's interesting is these two, chocolate and red wine, have a lot of similarities. So if you say, geez, I want to get the benefits and I don't like red wine or I don't like chocolate, you still can get the benefits from one of them. But from a cardiovascular point of view, they lower bad cholesterol. They elevate the good cholesterol. They decrease your chance for a stroke. They increase your chance of surviving a stroke. So from the heart side, chocolate as well as red wine help because there's flavanols in there. Flavonoid is the chemical in there. They both increase your cognitive function. So most people think, boy, I get dumber as I drink wine or as I eat chocolate. No, it's actually the opposite. And as long as, again, it's in moderation, it'll actually increase your cognitive function to a point that resveratrol, is one of the things that is in red wines, and they are looking at that as part of a treatment for Alzheimer's.
Now, you told me, too, about a study where pregnant women ate chocolate and their kids were less stressed.
Yeah, how about that? So a study was done, and they're looking at children at the age of 6 months. So they tracked patients who took chocolate, mothers who took chocolate during their pregnancy, and others that didn't. And they showed at the age of 6 months, the children whose mother took chocolate had better dispositions, were more laid back, were more relaxed.
How about that?
Yeah.
And it helps memory?
Helps memory. You know, and for people like you and I on the golf course a lot, and Dave and Andrea, it actually helps prevent sunburn and actually gives you your skin much more strength.
He's just made my day. This
wow.
is fantastic.
Here, Audrey, I'm going to give you even something better to make
okay,
your day.
Okay, good.
Do you consider either of these a diet food?
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay. They both are.
Oh, yes.
If you have chocolate, if you have dark chocolate about 2 hours before you eat a meal, you are going to consume somewhere between 15 and 20% less calories during that meal. You're not going to eat as much because, yep. And a glass of red wine with dinner. As we eat, everyone knows after you eat, you have this big spike in your sugar. And that's because you just put this large amount of food in your stomach, and it's going to absorb as much of the sugar as it can. That large spike in sugar causes inflammation and causes problems with our liver. But taking a glass of wine, it decreases that sugar spike. So it doesn't allow the absorption of as much sugar. So that, again, helps to decrease the chance of type 2 diabetes as well.
Well, isn't this why the French are healthier?
Exactly. You know, everyone's probably heard of this story, you know, the
Chris
French
is
paradox.
So bitchy.
Yeah, the French paradox is the demographics for the people in France versus the demographics for the people in the United States are pretty much equal. And yet their causes of death due to heart disease are way lower than they are in the United States. So they did a huge study about 25 years ago, and showed that, boy, this is when they showed that red wine actually increases your HDL, your high-density lipoprotein, the good cholesterol. That's protective of our heart. So the French paradox has always been they drink more red wine there, yet they have a diet that's higher in fat, and yet they have lower deaths due to heart disease. And that's what brought the whole study of resveratrol and the tannins in blood, in the wine that show that it's actually preventive for heart disease.
Boy, that's the best news all day.
All right, Doc. Well, aren't you
Thanks,
Santa
Doc.
Claus? It's Santa Claus most. But again, people, moderation. Moderation.
That's the biggest story is moderation. Don't overdo it. Use it for the health benefit, and you'll still get the other benefits.
One glass of red wine, one half-size dark chocolate candy bar.
2 hours before a meal.
Heck, and with the banana, yeah. I'm having a chocolate bar right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, and obviously Chinese food and pizza. thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, impact every day.
There is no way the Senate should confirm anyone that Barack Obama tries to appoint in his last year in office to a lifetime appointment.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
You read my thoughts on this in a sensitively entitled blog called Just Do Your Damn Jobs. With love to the president and to Congress. It's up now at Cochran Show, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook, at Cochran Show on Twitter. At John Carl for ABC's chief White House correspondent for ABC News, the best in the business, Jonathan Carl joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great.
You know, my confusion is why the Republicans continue to shoot themselves in their own feet here, because the process would be the president would name. They would have the votes up or down. They clearly have the votes to vote no, but instead coming out so viciously and publicly that if Obama says that we're not going to do it, just proves the Democrats' argument and gives Clinton and Sanders a bunch of campaign fodder to run with. What are they thinking here?
Well, they're thinking that it's virtually without precedent to see a president nominate a justice in an election year and get that justice confirmed when the opposite party controls the Congress. I mean, to go back, you know, the last time we've seen a justice nominated and confirmed in an election year was 1940. That was FDR, but the Democrats controlled the Senate. So you really, there's in the modern history, there's no precedent. But your point's a good one. They could easily go through and hold hearings and then vote the nominee down in the Judiciary Committee. It wouldn't even have to go to the full Senate, and then the president did his job, Congress did its job, and, you know, the result's the same. The next president picks the next justice.
Yeah, and the process matters because at that point you're actually following the rules as they're laid out in the Constitution, which is the document that both parties claim they worship.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how this plays out because you have 11 months left on President Obama's term. You have almost a full year. He will make his nomination in the next 3 or 4 weeks. So you're going to have 10 months where you're going to have somebody just kind of sitting out there. And, you know, Democrats will be hammering the drum on this on Capitol Hill. And, of course, you'll hear Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders hammering away on this. And it's a much easier talking point for them to say, just give the guy a hearing.
Right.
Let's hear what's happening. Give him a vote. But you know, that the Republicans are just simply going to stand firm. But, you know, I got to tell you, look at this. The idea that Republicans would allow this president in his final months in office to name not just a justice, but Scalia's replacement is it's pretty impossible. I think they could nominate Abraham Lincoln and the Republicans would reject it.
Well, and that's the question I was going to ask you. Is there someone, including a couple of names that have come up from the D.C. Circuit Court and the people that have received unanimous approval by the Senate in the past few years, they could pass muster, but second to that would be the obvious follow-up question. Who wants to be the sacrificial lamb that the Senate can shoot down?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, look, there are a number of nominees, the potential nominees that the president could look to who have support in the past from Republicans. Sri Srinivasan is the one you hear most often mentioned. He is on the D.C. Circuit Court. He was approved 97-0. He is somebody who served under George W. Bush in the White House counsel's office, a non-political role. He was a clerk for Sandra Day O'Connor, of course, a Reagan appointee. He clerked for Harvey Wilkinson, another very conservative, very, very highly respected among conservatives, lower court judge. It's, you know, he's somebody that, and under other circumstances, you could see Republicans saying that's the best possible guy we could get from a Democratic president. But again, in this circumstance, you're not just talking about replacing any justice. You're talking about replacing Scalia, the conservative icon of the court. If they were replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg or another one of the liberals, I could see a different situation. But you're talking about replacing really the conservative cornerstone of the court.
Jonathan, could you see in any circumstance where the high court would actually step in and tell Congress, because this is a constitutional duty, could the high court step in and say that they have to send a nominee through?
The high court will stay as far away from this as it possibly can. I don't see that happening. under any circumstance. And we've had, there is precedent for a vacancy that's gone on for some time. You know, when Abe Fortas stepped down, at the end of LBJ, beginning of Nixon, Nixon had his first two picks rejected. You had more than a year of an 8-member Supreme Court. So this has happened before. Now, one thing different in that scenario, at least the Congress was going through and acting on the president's nominees. They were rejecting him, but they were going through. So this is highly unusual if indeed, and we don't know, the Republicans have not officially said whether or not they would even not hold hearings. They've all said, look, it's up to the next president. But I think Grassley is going to be very interesting to watch. Chuck Grassley, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He hasn't definitively said, does he decide to go forward with hearings? Because there seems to be a strong political argument, at the very least, for saying, okay, let's go ahead and have hearings, and then we can vote it down.
I know you got to run here, but the end run on this is a 4-4 tie would mean what for decisions that are in the pipeline now or decisions in the fall session?
So a 4-4 tie means that the lower court's ruling stands and that there is no precedent set by the Supreme Court. So it just means basically the Supreme Court's action is vacated, lower court decision stands. Now, we had 28% of the cases in the court's previous term were 5-4 decisions. Of those 28% of cases, about a third of them had Scalia in the majority. So in other words, with Scalia gone, would have ended up being 4-4 cases. So you could have this, you could have quite a few cases in a court as divided as it is that that go 4-4, and basically the Supreme Court just has to let the lower court stand.
And by the way, all I'm advocating is for that the Constitution matters, because let's not kid ourselves, a situation being reversed, the Democrats will be saying the same thing and making the same argument in the current climate we're in.
There is no question Democrats would be doing exactly the same thing. There's no pure form of hypocrisy than arguments over Senate procedure, at least that I've found in covering politics for 20 years.
Well, we thank you for doing it so we don't have to.
all right, you got it.
Jonathan Carl, thank you, sir.
All right, take care.
John Carl, at John Carl, J-O-N-K-A-R-L, on social media. He's really, really good. And he is a guy that has regularly stood up to the White House, has very entertaining battles with Josh Earnest, who we like as well, the White House spokesperson, but does a great job as the chief White House correspondent. All right, 7:23 now. There's so much political news. Elliot Spitzer, the former governor of New York, who David Letterman used to describe as, you know, he liked whores. Elliot Spitzer, who was involved with an expensive prostitute
called
in
her?
New York. I can't think of her name. What's her name?
Oh,
she was famous for 10
Heidi?
Minutes.
Yes, she was.
Why do all the hookers have to be named Heidi?
No, I just thought that was her name.
You're thinking of Heidi, the one that had the black book in Hollywood?
Right, with Charlie Sheen's name in it.
Yeah, I can't think of her name either. At any rate, Ashley Dupree. Well, that doesn't sound like that's ridiculous. Ashley Dupree doesn't sound like a woman who would be involved in that kind of business at all. I don't know what people are saying. So here's the thing. Spitzer, over the weekend, is now standing accused of a sexual assault of a woman he met at a bar in a hotel, who he convinced to go up to his room, who she says then sexually assaulted him. I got to say, Elliot Spitzer, Kev, just look, how old is Elliot Spitzer? Is he 60? I don't know what kind of high-test Viagra this dude's on, but 56. Okay, he needs some control. If you were involved, if you lost the job as governor, if your political career was essentially destroyed because, as David Letterman says, he enjoyed the horse. If that's the move you made, wouldn't you stay away from this kind of trouble?
Yeah. And by the way, his wife, who they loosely based The Good Wife on, remember the one who always stood by his side?
They got divorced, didn't they?
They got divorced a year and a half ago.
Yeah. She hung around for a while,
mm-hmm,
trying to make it work.
Yeah.
So Elliot Spitzer, you know, and again, you need to take the woman's view on this and give her the benefit of the doubt until there's a determination on whether or not a crime was committed. But I don't know how this goofball continues to get himself into trouble like this. But if he is some serial criminal, throw him in jail. There's no woman in New York safe as long as Spitzer's on the street.
That's wrong.
So that's out there. That's in the news today. And how does all of this Antonin Scalia stuff affect the presidential race? Well, I think it's fairly clear. If the Republican candidates don't shut up and allow the process to run its course, you are handing moderate and undecided votes to the Democrats. If you're a moderate or undecided voter and you're going into this and you hear every Republican candidate of note saying, forget about the Constitution, it's not fair. We're only going to play if we win. It doesn't matter that the president constitutionally has an obligation to pick a Supreme Court replacement. It's in an election year, and there's no precedent for this, and it's not fair. Look, I get how big a deal this is. Jonathan Carl just said it. Others have said it all weekend. And that is you are deciding a Supreme Court position that will decide the laws of the land and how it affects our life for the next 20 or 25 years. It's a big deal. But, you know, at some point, it's tough noogies. You know, Antonin Scalia didn't go, how great would it be if I died Saturday and threw the presidential race into an uproar?
No, and you know
the
what?
Man died when he died. Right. The president has a job to do, and the Senate has a job to do. And again, the Senate has the votes to decide this, as Jonathan Carl just pointed out, to not even let it get out of committee. So why would the dopes running for president continue to say, ignore the Constitution? Again, I'm pointing this out at the top of the show. Marco Rubio, in one paragraph, in one sentence, in one compound sentence, said, we need to respect the memory of Antonin Scalia, who believed the Constitution should be treated as it was written, and then followed it with, Obama doesn't get to make the next pick. What?
That makes absolutely no sense. He had the best line, though, of the day so far, though. No purer form of hypocrisy.
Yeah, than the United States Senate procedures. That's Carl, Jonathan Carl,
Jonathan
not Rubio.
Carl. Right, exactly, exactly.
So the candidates, the presidential race as it goes on will be impacted by this if the Republicans continue to make it a campaign issue. They're screaming at the trees because they want all of the right-wing conservatives who come out, the far right-wing conservatives who come out to vote in these primaries, to vote for them. Procedurally, it's a disaster. Everything, what do we know? Everything you say at a presidential race sticks to tape. You're just handing the Democrats campaign commercials. You can't claim to care about the Constitution and then say ignore the Constitution.
No, I agree. And as we said before, it's the power of the presidency. It's the power of the incumbent. It's unfortunate that Scalia died.
Right.
But as Jonathan Carl pointed out, too, God forbid if it had been Elena Kagan or Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The Democrats will be doing the exact same thing if the shoe is on the other foot. But guess what? It's not.
That's right.
So go through the process. It's 728 and a half. Let's do this. We'll take a break, come back, get your big story in just a moment. And coming up in just a few moments, we'll give you some other details on the Scalia case and go through about 75 other stories that I don't have time to put anywhere else on the show. Stand by on a very busy Monday on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago.
I can't feel my feet without any of you. Don't know what this is. I can't feel something.
My face.
Oh, it's your face. I never understood this song. I know it's a big hit. I can't feel my face when I'm with you.
I never understood that either. I know you get all tingly, but how could you not feel your face?
Yeah, all the symptoms of falling in love. I can't feel my face when I'm with you. I don't. Kevin, let's go to you on this.
I think The Weeknd is referring to something else, if that's what you're talking about. Is that the song you're talking about, or one I just played?
Yeah, what is the one you just played?
That's by De La Soul. I don't have the title of the song.
It sounded like I Can't Feel My Face.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, the guy, The Weeknd.
That's the name of the band, Steve.
Yeah,
I know. It's spelled from
it's spelled
W-E-E-K-N-D.
Yeah.
What do you mean? All the blood goes to a different part of his body?
No, I believe he does a lot of drugs, from what I hear.
I can't feel my face when I'm with you because is it a love song to drugs?
I believe so, yes.
Maybe he's standing on his head and his face is numb.
Oh.
Could be.
What does Sugar Sugar by the Archies mean? Do you know, Kevin?
They do a lot of drugs, too.
You mean it's not about candy? I had a friend who, you know, the AC/DC song, You Shook Me All Night Long?
Uh-huh.
She's like, why would they
make thought it was an earthquake?
No, she thought, like, the guy was shaking her, or she was being, you know, shaken.
As opposed to having the earth moved?
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a weird explanation.
I'm tired of talking about politics for at least a few minutes, so let me tell you a lovely love story of lovely love. The Newells have been married. He's 101, and she is, I believe, 99. They have been married for how long?
65 years.
83 years.
80, actually.
Oh.
80 years.
Man, that's awesome.
80 years. The Newells have been eating together almost right next to each other every night for 80 years. Born and raised in Iowa, the couple marked their 8 decades of marriage this month with lunches and parties thrown by families and friends. On Valentine's Day, time for people all over the world to contemplate the meaning of love. The Newells say love is a mixture of affection and respect.
Aw, God bless them. How sweet.
70% of marriages that began in the 90s reached their 15th anniversary. That's up from about 85% of those that began in the 70s and 80s. Well, it should be down from that. Those who married in the 2000s are so far divorcing at even lower rates. People are now staying married longer.
Oh, that's good.
Because it wasn't that long ago that if you got divorced, it was a coin flip. I mean, if you got married, it was a coin flip. It was 50-50 that you were going to be divorced.
So is it people who are getting married more recently or staying married longer?
Yep.
As opposed to, say, the 70s and 80s?
Okay. Because people are getting married later, I think.
That could be. One marriage that looks like it's headed for trouble, and we'll take this up with Dean, is Kanye West and Kim Kardashian.
No.
What?
Yeah,
shocking.
Shock.
No way.
That's a shock.
That's
yeah.
Absolutely shocking.
Kanye West had a bizarre music performance. Is it music? Is Kanye doing music? What was he doing on Saturday Night Live? Because I didn't recognize that as music.
What was that?
Did you see it as well?
I did.
He did that the last time. Remember he performed in the box? He was
I like Gold Digger. I like some Kanye stuff. You know, I come from hip hop. Those are my roots, as you know.
Yeah.
More hip than hop. But I don't know what he did Saturday night. And one of his key players, co-writer of a lot of his stuff, came out publicly this weekend, said he needs counseling and help, and he's not working with him anymore.
Oh.
And then Kanye said that he's $53 million in debt.
I'm actually surprised that Kanye's marriage lasted this long.
Now, if you could like Kanye, feel a little bad for him. Nobody feels bad for someone named Martin Shkreli, or I should say Shkreli. This is the pharmaceutical slash Wall Street cheat that raised the price of an HIV-fighting drug 5,500% overnight. He offered to buy Kanye West's latest album if Kanye West would give it to him exclusively and not release it for $10 million. Someone named, I love this story. Please let this story be true. Someone named Daquan, allegedly representing Kanye West, arranged for a Bitcoin transfer totaling $15 million. The actual agreed upon price. $15 million to not release Kanye's album. The Bitcoin was transferred into an account that Kanye supposedly owned, managed by someone named Daquan. There is no Bitcoin account that is legitimately tied to Kanye. Daquan is now missing with $15 million of Shkreli's dollars.
Yeah.
Now, this has been brought up that this could be some internet stunt for this creep to get some sympathy. No one's giving him any sympathy at all. But from his official Twitter account, it came progressively more intense freakouts from him. After the $15 million was transferred, Shkreli screamed, "Who the F has my $15 million? Someone named Daquan said he was Kanye's boy and signed the deal to buy the album. Call the police. This is BS. Shkreli said, "GoFundMe will be up tomorrow. I don't know what to do. OMFG. I hope you'll enjoy this stupid music so much. The fact that it brought me so much pain and suffering, I quit rap."
Oh, good.
So for everybody that had to pay $750 per pill for a $13 pill, Shkreli, I just hope it's true.
I do, too.
I just hope it's true. And I hope Daquan gets caught as well, because he's obviously a bad guy.
I have a feeling it's not his real name.
So, and they should take Shkreli's money and give it to the nearest HIV charity of note. So, 7:45 later, and Dave, you're going to like this, later,
what's the best beer to have with Girl Scout cookies?
That's an interesting question.
The best beer pairings for Girl Scout cookies.
Never really thought about that, Steve.
You know what, Dave? Your face lit up so much, we'll do it in a few minutes after traffic. Why put off that kind of good news? But first, traffic trouble spots for Mary on 720 WGN.
1, 2, 3, 4. Thin mints nationwide, the most popular in the bunch. With a taste of mint, just a hint, and a chocolatey coated crunch. The sales
before we get to... Where'd you get the Girl Scout cookies on? Huh?
I can't believe this exists.
Before we get to the right beer to pair with your Girl Scout cookies, and Dave, this is a requested segment by Dave. Kevin, this would probably be a good time for you to tell us how to become a Kid of the Week.
Kid of the Week, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the contest page. There's a link on the top of our main page. Click on that. You'll see a Kid of the Week link. Fill out the form. That'll get sent our way, or you can just email us at stevecochranshow@wgnradio.com.
Julie Herz from the Brewers Association of America is the expert behind the piece from craftbeer.com. She also dedicates part of her new book, Beer Pairing, the Essential Guide from Pairing Pros to Scouting the Perfect Brewskis to Go with Snacks Like Girl Scout Cookies. So let me go through. Thin Mints. Dave? Thin Mints, best beer for Thin Mints.
Thin Mints, I would say probably a dark beer, maybe like a stout.
I think you're probably right. You'll have to interpret this for me. The expert says these popular mint flavored cookies dipped in chocolate beg for a coffee or chocolate infused stout.
Well, okay,
like a Guinness maybe,
or a porter, such as the chocolate oak aged Yeti Imperial Stout. Mm-hmm. From the Great Divide Brewing Company. Have you had the Yeti?
I don't believe so, no. Mm-hmm. But that sounds like kind of what I was suggesting.
Have you had the Yeti? Sounds like code, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I'm not sure I'd admit that.
How about rah-rah raisins?
I'm not familiar with those cookies.
Well, they're oatmeal cookies stuffed with raisins.
Oh, kind of healthy.
Greek-flavored yogurt chunks.
Oh, that sounds good.
Those are new, I believe.
They are?
Yes.
Mm. Let's see. They want a milky stout with coffee undertones like the Bittersweet from Left Hand Brewing Company.
Oh.
Which the beer expert says tastes like an expensive latte. That'll really get you sideways if you have too many of them.
Kind of weird, though, to pair beer with something that has Greek yogurt and raisins in it. Isn't that odd?
I don't know. She's the beer expert. Dave?
I mean, I guess okay. It's worth trying.
How about Do-si-dos?
I don't like those.
Which ones are those?
They have the coconut, right?
No, Do-si-dos are the chocolate on top of the peanut butter.
Oh, those are the best.
Those are really
those are
good.
My favorite. I don't know those are called Do-si-dos.
Oh, wait a minute. No, they might be the peanut butter ones.
Oh, yeah, they're the peanut butter sandwich cookie.
Yes, the peanut butter sandwich cookie.
That's it. Also Sorry. Good, though, by the way.
I'm thinking something maybe a little hoppier for that.
American Amber Ales, like Hopback Amber Ale, and Belgian-style brews like something called the Allagash Brewing Company's Dubel.
Okay.
That's kind of what you
that's
said, right?
Good. Yeah, well.
That's what you said.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But lighter.
I think you're 3 for 3, Dave, and proving that you have a problem. Samoas are the caramel and toasted coconut rings.
Oh, those are the good ones.
Like. Drizzled
those
with chocolate.
Those are the best.
Those are awful.
What?
Coconut Dave, beer for these would be
I
what?
Think those, maybe a pale ale.
Here we're going with a Belgian-style quadruple,
what?
Like Russian River Brewing Company's Salvation Strong Dark Ale.
Really?
Or an American brown ale, like Brooklyn Brewery's brown ale, he tried to say.
You would think it would be a light beer because those are a heavy, heavy cookie.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you two know more than the beer lady.
Well,
that's 3 out of 4.
That. I know more about the Girl Scout cookies, perhaps.
Tagalongs are the ones we were talking about
those
before.
Those are the ones with the chocolate best and the ones. Peanut butter.
All right, what do you like here, Dave? Peanut butter and chocolate.
Peanut butter. I'm going to go with like a Weiss beer.
They say try brown ales brewed with coffee or chocolate.
I don't
like
know
face
about
down brown ale from Telluride Brewing Company for a perfect match.
I'd like something lighter with that.
Dave,
I'd
you're
go
on
with red
such
wine.
A streak here.
Yeah, well,
you'd go with red wine as the perfect beer.
Well, red wine with chocolate. Come on, Jack Most said too.
Trefoils?
Trefoils.
Trefoils.
Those are the shortbread ones.
Shortbread.
Exactly.
Those are good.
What do you like with trefoils?
Boring.
I would say a light beer, maybe.
Something lighter.
I'd go heavy.
A light beer, maybe like a golden ale?
She says the American pale ale.
Okay,
there's
the
pale ale. That's what we said. Yeah, the pale ale.
Okay, was that what you were going to choose?
Yeah, something.
Okay, okay. Like long that. As I, okay, so I'll give you credit for that.
Thank you.
So you're 4 for 6.
Okay.
And finally, is this new, Mary? Lemonades?
No, there's always been a lemon cookie of okay. some sort.
These are shortbreads topped with lemon icing.
Those are a little different.
They used to be more of a sandwich. Some
yes, it was
pin.
A lemon
those
sandwich.
Are so much better. I think they got rid of them.
Those were awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what do you like here, Dave?
What are they again? I don't. I
Am
don't,
I interrupting you?
Just
no,
a boring.
No, I don't. No, I don't. It's I'm like not the, familiar
it's
with
like
them.
It's like the shortbread cookie, only it has lemon flavor to it.
Yeah,
it's
I mean that's
frosting.
I've never had one of those, Steve. It's a little tough to say.
Well, but you know what we're talking about, a shortbread cookie with lemon. So what beer are you pairing with it? I'd go with an old Milwaukee.
Yeah. Natty Light. How about, I go with the pale ale over that.
Good call. Pale ales.
Okay.
Pale ales. Go with Pallet Jack IPA from Barley Brown's Beer to create more summer in your mouth.
IPA and IPA. You mean.
What'd I say? IPA?
IPA.
I'm a heavy drinker. I don't know if you guys can tell.
IPA.
So old Milwaukee is not a good call on that?
No, I think it would be fine.
No? Okay.
We'll have to try these out when the Girl Scout cookies actually arrive. Yeah, I mean, some people have gotten them already, but I'm waiting. I ordered mine about a month ago for my little niece, and I'm waiting.
I don't think this is an effective way to do it. I think the better way to do it is an actual taste test.
Yes.
With IPAs?
With IPAs included.
I have a lot of IPAs in there?
A lot of IPAs.
Yeah. Former producer of this show, Ann Johnso, has two adorable daughters who were selling Girl Scout cookies. And Ann actually cut out the middlewoman. She goes, look, I know you'll buy from them. Let's test this, yeah. See if you buy from me. So next thing you know, I'm out $500, but you guys are getting a lot of cookies.
Oh, good. Well, when they come, Dave, you get the beer, and we're set.
Yeah, bring the IPAs. It's 7:57. We'll get to Dean next hour. And also William Shatner. Shatner in his new book, Leonard, My 50-Year Friendship with a Remarkable Man about Leonard Nimoy. He loved the IPAs. We're coming back with the news in a moment on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
8:10 in the morning, and Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9. Oh, by the way, the blog, which I've sensitively entitled Just Do Your Damn Jobs on the mess with Scalia's replacement, is up now. And again, at Cochran Show and Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. Kanye, Dean joins us now from Channel 9. Kanye West is
he
broke.
Is he up for the Supreme Court, Kanye West?
Well, he'd be an interesting choice, wouldn't he? You know, the stuff is normally bogged down in legalese, and it's hard to understand. Whatever Kanye wrote would be hard to understand.
I can't think of anybody more difficult to understand than Kanye West. I think he'd fit in perfectly.
Well, let's not count him out. Is he really broke?
He tweeted over the weekend that he is $53 million in debt. Forbes magazine says he's worth $20 million. That his salary last year, his total take and income was $20 million last year. Where the other money went, I don't know. Kim Kardashian is certainly worth quite a few simoleons.
Well, that's something you can't claim that Kim spent it all on the credit card. She's got her own money.
She's got arguably maybe even more money than Kanye. And, you know, maybe this whole thing is just a publicity stunt as well to get attention. He is, you know, next to Donald Trump, the king of that. He had a new album that was released over the weekend. Did you see him on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, I thought he was awful. Inexplicably bad.
I couldn't have been more like my dad watching that. What the hell's that?
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
What's he doing there? I don't understand.
You know what it reminded me of? Like a sound check gone bad. Like it's 3 p.m, the concert's not till 8. We can fix this. But it was live TV.
More than a couple of times. I'm not a big, I don't really care about the pull up your pants thing with kids, because I think as teenagers we all had our crazy thing that we all did, and this is just the most current one. But his pants were below his buttocks. cheeks. I don't know how he keeps his pants up. I was more fascinated by that.
That's why his new album is called Belt. I need a belt. Where's my belt? So he's got two cuts on suspenders.
He tweets out his exact tweet was, you know, weird and somewhat difficult to understand, but said, I write this to you, my brothers, while still $53 million in personal debt. Please pray we overcome. This is my true heart. Then the next day, he tweets out another message sent to billionaire Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, he wants Zuckerberg to buy his ideas or something?
Yeah, he wants Zuckerberg to invest, quote, $1 billion into Kanye West ideas. And he added that he is the greatest artist of all time.
Well, that's the kind of guy, I mean, when you look at Kanye West, that's the kind of guy, Kanye West, you go, well, who do I have confidence in investing my money in? And I go, yeah, Kanye West.
Get me that guy who's $53 million in debt. I want to give him $1 billion.
One of his best friends in life has bailed on him now and said, look, I've tried to get him help. I can't help him. He needs counseling. He needs help, and he needs it now. And is sort of publicly begging Kanye to get help.
He is.
Yeah. Are we dealing with a bipolar disorder situation here?
Well, you know, it's not being a doctor, I couldn't say that for sure, but it sure sounds like it. You're talking about Chicago rapper Rhymefest, who I know very well and is a great guy, and he's been a longtime collaborator and co-writer with Kanye West, longtime friends with Kanye West. And over the weekend, he tweeted out that he's done working with him and just outwardly says he needs to get counseling, spiritual and mental.
Yeah, here's a tweet. My brother needs help in the form of counseling, spiritual and mental. He should step away from the public and heal.
Yeah, step away from the public and all the yes men.
And the yes men.
He said that's part of the problem. So, for someone who's close to him to come out and say something so blatant, I think is significant. I was talking with Rhymefest last night because, you know, I hang with all the rappers next to you.
Now, hold on a second. It's Sunday night in Dean Richards' world, and you're talking with Rhymefest.
Wait, this coming from the guy who said, I like some of Kanye's work. I like Gold Digger. Yeah. I was going to ask you for what other songs you like by him.
Well, I'm a big Gold Digger guy. Yeah. Yeah. So how did the conversation with Rhymefest come about?
I just sent him a tweet and I said, I'm hearing all this stuff. What's going on? Is it true? And he was laughing and he said, yeah, it's all true. So,
wow.
I think it's sad. I mean,
well, I do too.
It's more than just Kanye being typically kind of nutty Kanye stuff. I mean, it's for one of his closest friends to bail on him like this.
It's a big deal.
I think that says something.
Yeah, and the reason I bring up bipolar disorder in general because these feelings of being godlike are symptomatic of that. And Kanye doesn't seem like the guy who would recognize that he needs to get help. And then there was some weird Kim Kardashian thing this weekend. You know, I was tweeting with Kim last night. Well, Dean was tweeting with Rhymefest.
Name dropper.
And Kim Kardashian was referencing divorce in some sort of, you know, kind of elusive way. So I don't know. I'd hate to think this beautiful relationship could be up for grabs, but how many more lives are the Kardashians going to destroy?
Including all of those who watch the show.
All right, here's what else is coming up. Dean will tell us about Deadpool and if it made a bunch of money. Dean will tell us about the BAFTAs, the British Academy Awards.
Good stuff on the BAFTAs.
And Dean will tell us who's performing at the Grammys tonight. I'm sure he'll be tweeting with his homies. It's
hang on a second. Wiz Khalifa's on the phone for me. I got to go.
That's good because during this break, I've got to go see Wiz Khalifa. It's 8:16 and it's traffic time, and here's Mary.
Saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke.
This one Kanye made sense.
Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down.
Catchy.
Get down, girl, go ahead. She be the
bomb, met her at a. Dean asked me out the air if he could square dance to this.
Alameda left and promenade right.
All right, moving on. Deadpool, make any money?
$135 $5 million.
You're kidding me.
It was huge. Huge. The biggest R-rated.
Wait, was it huge or huge?
It was huge. Sorry, I mispronounced.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge. $135 million. It's expected to take $150 million by the time today is over, be part of the President's Day weekend. But the biggest R-rated movie opening of all time, biggest February movie opening
of all time.
Of all time. Of all time.
Why?
It's a fantastic movie. It's a great movie, and I think just the word got out that really how amazingly funny this movie is.
And so it's funny and it's entertaining.
Yes.
And it's Ryan Reynolds maybe too. It's got a little
something. I figured with a name like Deadpool that people, you know, who aren't comic book nuts would go, well, it's another horror movie or it's this or that, and they wouldn't even bite.
You don't even need to be a comic book fan. I went into this. I'd heard of Deadpool. I didn't really know what the history was and, you know, the comic book heritage and all that. Ryan Reynolds makes fun of the genre, makes fun of the movie itself. He makes fun of himself, his pretty boy image. It's so sarcastic and so irreverent and still has some good superhero moments in the whole thing. And just word of mouth spread, you know, like crazy on this. And I think that's what, you know, sent it over the top.
Better than Ant-Man?
I think it is better than Ant-Man.
Ant-Man was, you told me, I never saw Ant-Man. Ant-Man was okay, right?
Yeah, I liked Ant-Man. I didn't love Ant-Man. I love this. You know what this reminds me of? Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, that's a good movie. It's a funny movie.
That is, you know, just doesn't take itself very seriously.
Oh, you didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy?
Dean did. You did, right?
I did.
It was okay.
I thought it was entertaining.
I loved it.
I was tired.
Mm. Oh, you were tired?
I didn't have a lot of time when I was watching it.
So aren't they out of superheroes?
Oh, no. There's plenty in the Marvel Universe. Are you kidding me?
Oh, there's more?
There's plenty. Okay. We've got plenty for you.
When's Ratface coming out? Is that one?
That was based on a radio executive that you once knew?
Yeah, it is. I can't remember which one.
Hey, when's Wonder Woman coming out? Is she Marvel or is she the other one?
That's DC Comics.
DC, okay. Mm.
Oh, Marvel and DC are different?
Oh, yeah. Steve.
Oh, yeah. It's like a whole culture,
wow.
Subculture.
Let me kick you out of my nerd club.
Yeah.
Wow. Writers Guild Awards this weekend and the BAFTAs. Is one or the other more representative of what we'll see in the Oscars?
I think, really, in a way, I think they both are because the Writers Guild are obviously just writers, and that will represent probably who will win the best screenplay awards. The winners from the Writers Guild, it turned out to be, not surprisingly, Spotlight winning Best Original Screenplay for its story about the Boston Archdiocese sex scandal. The Big Short about the 2008 financial crisis won Best Adapted Screenplay. So huge money. I mean, if you've got Oscar pools coming up, huge money that these two probably will be the winners in those categories. For the BAFTA Awards, these are the British Academy.
It's a pretty entertaining show every
awards.
Year.
It's a very entertaining show. The Oscars really need to take a lesson on how to put on.
Who is the host this year?
An award show.
Was it the Queen?
It was not. The Queen couldn't make it this year.
Oh, and it's time for Best Actor.
Let's introduce the auditors who counted the votes.
Best Supporting Actress in a Supporting Role. Charles, bring me another envelope.
I love when everything sounds like Monty Python.
Or Mrs. Doubtfire.
Or Mrs. Doubtfire.
What? I thought I was spot on.
Big night for The Revenant. Leo DiCaprio won Best Actor. It won Best Picture. Alejandro Iñárritu took Best Director. It also won Best Cinematography and Best Sound. Mad Max Fury Road won 4 awards, makeup, costume design, production design, and editing. Brie Larson won Best Lead Actress from The Room. Kate Winslet won for Steve Jobs. And announcing the nominees for Best Supporting Actor was Rebel Wilson from this movie, How to Be Single.
She's kooky.
From the Pitch Perfect movies, really funny. She was hilarious in her introduction of this category. Listen.
I have never been invited to the Oscars because, as you know, they are racist. But the BAFTAs have diverse members. And that's what we all want to see in life, isn't it? Diverse members. One day, I hope to return here to win a BAFTA myself. I have already been practicing my transgendered face. Sorry, Idris Elba, you're making me a bit nervous. But I'm just sociologically programmed to want chocolate on Valentine's Day. Five really attractive men have been nominated. And I really look forward to congratulating the winner. Although, I'm looking forward even more to consoling the four losers.
She's funny, man. She's funny.
It's very, very funny.
How old is she?
I'm going to say...
She's not even 30, is she?
I think it's going to say about 28, I would guess.
Yeah, she's funny. Yep. She's definitely funny. All right, who's at the Grammys tonight?
It's going to be...
She's 35? I'm being told by the voices in my head that she's 35.
Really?
Wow. Well, she's over. So she had a good run there for that clip.
Taylor Swift is going to open the show tonight. She's nominated for 7 Grammy Awards. Kendrick Lamar, who has the most nominations tonight, 11, will also perform. The Weeknd will perform. Rihanna will be taking the stage for the first time.
Do you know if Weeknd got any medical help for that face problem he's having?
What do you mean his face problem?
Yeah, he can't feel his face when he's near me.
Oh, I can't feel my face when I'm near you.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he went to a clinic or something.
Just glad I got to sing a little bit.
Got some help.
If that's what you call it.
Kevin enjoyed the heck out of it. He's falling off his chair.
Rihanna is going to be performing, first time since her new album came out. Adele, who is not eligible this year, her new album, 25, won't be eligible till next year.
But make an exception. It's Adele.
She is going to be performing. But get this. There is a rock supergroup called the Hollywood Vampires who will be making their live TV debut.
Who's in it?
In this show. Alice Cooper, Johnny Depp, and Joe Perry. That's cool.
Wait a minute. Alice Cooper and Joe Perry. And who's the third?
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp's a musician?
Yeah. Guitar player.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Is he any good?
He's okay.
Does he look like Keith Richards when he does it?
I think so. Yeah. Doesn't he look like Keith Richards at everything?
Yeah, most of the time, yeah.
The cast of the Broadway show Hamilton will be performing, since nobody can get a ticket to that.
Have you heard their show-stopping number? Years from now, a man with an orange face and orange hair will destroy the country we're building tonight. Have you heard it? It's really good.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, it's strong.
I look forward to that. Yeah. And it's going to be really interesting tonight how they deal with the inordinate amount of music deaths outside of the regular memorial segment. Jackson Browne will be sitting in with the Eagles, and they're going to do a tribute to Glenn Frey.
Oh, how great is that?
He passed away.
Come on.
Lady Gaga is going to do a tribute to David Bowie. Chris Stapleton, Gary Clark Jr., and Bonnie Raitt will pay tribute to B.B. King. I'm sure there'll be other memorials with all that we've lost.
Boy, if you're an old musician, don't you want to die to see who tributes you? Because that's a pretty good lineup.
I think so. Bieber is supposed to be appearing tonight. Mm.
He's hard to get.
Pitbull, okay. Travis Barker, Robin Thicke is going to be making an appearance.
Does Robin Thicke know he's going to be there?
I don't know, not entirely sure about that.
Okay.
But the fun starts 7 o'clock tonight on your CBS.
And Kanye West will come up and ruin Taylor Swift's moment because it's just a tradition. That's all.
I have not heard if he's going to be there tonight or not. I believe he's nominated. Believe he is. I haven't looked at the full list to see if he's on there, but I hope so because he always brings a lot of fun to any show.
Well, listen, Rhymefest is probably on hold for you, so good luck.
Did I mention I have to call Wiz Khalifa? I'll take that, Wiz.
So we'll see. That's funny.
It's Dean Richards live from Channel 9. Bye, buddy.
Bye.
Coming up, your big story next on 720 WGN.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
William Shatner has a new book out called Leonard, My 50-Year Friendship with a Remarkable Man. Co-author is David Fisher with the book, and we're standing by for Mr. Shatner right now to talk about his friend, Mr. Nimoy. And he's with, okay, good. William Shatner back on the program. Mr. Shatner, always a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine.
And I hope you enjoyed your show in Joliet.
Did you hear about that?
Well, I was supposed
I drove from Long Island to Joliet during that blizzard.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, I thought you knew that.
No, I was supposed to be at the show, and I was valet parking outside, and nobody let me in.
That's hysterical. Yes, I drove from, in the middle of the blizzard, I drove to Joliet to make a performance there. Because all the airports were closed.
That's a showman, kids. That's a showman. That's a guy that's dedicated.
Dedicated, yes. Yes. And you know, that's an interesting word about friendship. This book I've written is about friendship. And I think dedication is one of the words you've got to use when you try to define what friendship is.
Well, look at you with your fancy transition that the publisher told you to say. Leonard, my 50-year friendship with a remarkable man. All right, now here's the thing. And by the way, it's at William Shatner, all over social media. He's very active in social media, and he will drive to your house if he has a performance scheduled. Damn the weather. He'll do whatever he needs to do.
Listen, if 1,500 people want to come and see me in Joliet.
You're going to be there.
And there's a raging blizzard that ultimately dumps 2 feet of snow on New York. I'm going to get to Joliet.
Good for you.
And then next day get to Detroit, where another 2,000 people are waiting for me. That was the nature of my tour a few weeks ago. But
couldn't you have, like, Mr. Sulu drive you or something? Why did you have to drive yourself?
Because I was doing it by airplane, but all the airports had closed.
Okay.
I was going to, on this tour, I was going to go to LaGuardia and fly to Chicago and rent a car and drive to Joliet.
Well, I'm very impressed. And I mean that literally. I'm very impressed. So there's a bunch of interesting things in the book. You take yourself through the parallels with your career and Leonard Nimoy's career.
Hello.
And he was, did I lose you?
I'm back.
Okay.
There's a bunch of things. You left me when you. There's a bunch of things in the book, yes.
There's a lot of things in the book that I did not know. For instance, in the 50s, Nimoy started out as a movie actor. Did we lose you again? Mr. Shatner? All right. We're going to see if we can reestablish the line. We've got a phone problem.
He's driving a Joliet. the interview so much.
He's coming back. He left his wallet. Let's get traffic from Mary and see if we can reconnect with Shatner. We've reestablished a connection with Mr. Shatner. The rest of this interview will be conducted in a background way by teletype and semaphore to make sure that we don't lose connections again.
Talk about fancy transitions. You put the weather on instead of me. That's a transition.
I was complimenting you.
I left you when you said there are things about the book, and then you dropped out, or your carrier needs to be. You got to pay the bills, actually.
Well, it's a temperamental little hamster. So in the book, Leonard, you parallel your two careers. But here's what I didn't know: that Nimoy had a nice character actor movie career going, and prior to Star Trek, TV wasn't that big a deal. Now you got major movie stars tripping over each other to do TV. It was way different then, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. When I was coming up and doing live television, which was like doing a play, series television had an aspect to it that it was said serious actors didn't do them. So innumerable attempts to employ me, I turned down until Steve McQueen made it big from TV to films, and then all of a sudden it was you had to be in a series to get into movies.
So did you like Nimoy right away? There's a great line in the book. I can't remember which story you were telling, but you said, well, you know, it was in regards to the drinking issues that he had, that he was very public about later in life. But you said he came to work, he put his ears on just like everybody else, and you couldn't tell that there were any problems. Did you like him? He was just a professional, or did you have to grow to like him?
From what I can remember, I always liked him, and we might have our differences, I'm told, but they didn't seem very serious, at least in retrospect, and those things worked themselves out, as they did, and it, but in many showbiz entities, a play, a series, a movie, the cast gets together. They're fighting a war against management and,
sure.
and trying to get this thing done. They go to war, is awfully it's often termed. So you bond, but then when the project is over, everybody goes their different ways, and that best friend forever you might never see again. And that could have happened on Star Trek with Leonard and me, except that the continuing popularity of Star Trek brought us together innumerable times, which fomented the friendship.
And it turns into a lifelong friendship. And I don't want to give away any of the Star Trek series stories because they're so great in the book. But there's a great point later in the book where you were a little annoyed because J.J. Abrams was making a Star Trek movie without you. And you talk about going to lunch with J.J. Abrams, buying him the best sushi he's ever had, and then sitting down with Nimoy and maybe bitching a little, who knows. But what did Nimoy say to you?
I've forgotten.
He
what
said,
did he say?
In the book, you point out, he said to you, you remember Star Trek Generations? And you go, it kind of fades together for me. He goes, that's the one I wasn't in.
My best line to Nimoy on that occasion was, "You know you're old when you go back in time and you're still old."
That's tremendous.
That was my best gag. It was that kind of thing where he would, just as you laughed, that he would. He and I became hysterical at times on stage together, and in being. Doing personal appearances together, so being on stage at the same time and having to amuse an audience ad lib for an hour, we would break each other up and in that strange way get to know each other even better.
How good an actor was he?
He was a very good actor. He applied himself he made it such a craft. He had studied it that way, he taught it that way, and he performed it that way. He was, in effect, a consummate actor.
All right, I know you got to run and talk to other people. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Get an Uber, will you? I don't want to worry about you driving across the country, for crying out loud.
Take care. I long to see you soon.
All the best. William Shatner. At William Shatner, all over social media.
What a great guy. He's so funny.
What did we determine? 83? 84?
Shatner? And what a nice tribute to write a book about his friend.
Well, I'm not sure he wrote it based on a couple of his answers.
No, but openly
How
saying...
How old, Kev?
84.
84.
And openly saying, you know what, they did have a bit of a falling out. And
Riff,
when
sure.
he died, you know, they weren't on the best of terms, but were friends for all these years.
Yeah. No, listen.
It's a nice tribute.
Listen, I can't fault an 84-year-old guy for not remembering what he put in a book where I don't know where my keys and wallet are most of the day.
Especially an 84-year-old who just drove from
right.
New York to Joliet to
blizzard.
Do his show
How
in a blizzard.
That? How about that?
Oh, my gosh.
For everybody in show business who goes, oh, what do you mean I got to drive 20 miles? Where's my car? I mean, come on. That's a showman,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
1,500 people paying to come see me. I'm going to get there one way or another. That's pretty cool. It's what time is it? Let me carry the two. It's 8:52. We'll take a break, come back, and continue next on 720 WGN.
The Blackhawks!
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh.
The Steve Cochran Show presents... Hawk.
Chicago.
Oh.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Sponsored by the official deodorizer of your Chicago Blackhawks, Fresh Wave. Remember the Fresh Wave slogan, Dave. Whoa! What died in here?
I don't think that's their actual slogan, but that works.
Kevin, what is their slogan?
The official deodorizer of the Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks.
All right, here's to Dave.
All right, we've been talking this morning about injured reserve, Marian Hossa going on injured reserve, but there's also long-term injured reserve. When Hossa was injured Saturday night against Anaheim, there's a lot of concern about how long he would be out. Coach Joel Quenneville did say after the game the injury didn't appear to be too serious or as serious as it looked when he had to be helped off the ice, and some degree of confirmation yesterday when the Blackhawks placed Hossa on injured reserve, not the long-term injured reserve. And these are two different designations.
When a player does it depend on your deductible? Because it sounds like you're selling me insurance at this point.
It kind of does sound that way, doesn't it? Yeah. I apologize about that. When a player is placed on injured reserve like Jose, he must be out at least 7 days, but he's still allowed to travel with the team, attend meetings, and the like. But if it's a more serious injury, a player may be placed on long-term injury reserve. This was the case last spring with Patrick Kane's broken clavicle, and early this season, Duncan Keith underwent knee surgery. A player placed on long-term injured reserve must be out at least 10 games and 24 days, and under those circumstances, the team does get some relief under the salary cap. Basically, the team is temporarily allowed to exceed the salary cap, but has to get back below the cap when the player comes off the long-term injured list. And there's a formula for computing the amount of relief based on how much cap space the team has and the amount of the injured player's
salary cap. Look, I'll buy the policy. All right?
Thank you. Okay, did you want term or did you want...
I'll take a little term, a little whole life, okay, and a large Diet Coke.
Okay.
When will we get Hossa back? What is your best guess?
Well, it's 7 days. You know, here's an idea. We could ask Coach Q that.
We could, but he won't tell us.
He won't tell us.
No.
It's 7 days from the time he was injured, which...
would be next week.
So it would be next Sunday. Now, they play Minnesota in the Stadium Series game on Sunday. So I don't know if he would be eligible to play or if he would be ready to play. He doesn't have to come back after the 7 days.
Well,
he could
be
out a little longer.
If it's super cold out, it might be good for the injury. You know, it's like an ice pack. It's an actual ice pack.
I guess it is. Yeah, I guess it is.
Because obviously the weather in Minnesota in February can be a tad chilly.
Yes, it can.
Well, Dave, I feel like I've learned a lot and gotten a migraine.
And gotten a new insurance policy.
Yes, all of those.
So I'm glad I could help, and that's our Hawkopedia for today.
And remember, it's sponsored by Freshwave. Here's Kevin with the actual slogan.
The official deodorizer of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the island.
Would all sing, he would take 9-10, Coach Q about to join us, sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. Any Blackhawk news outside of the host information while we wait for Coach Q?
I think that's the big story. Of course, this is a big week because after tonight, and they need to get a win here tonight, last game of the homestand, then they go and play the Rangers in New York on Wednesday. Then they go to the White House on Thursday, and then they go off to Minnesota. They've got the alumni game up there on Saturday. The Blackhawks, number of former Blackhawks are playing former members of the Wild and the North Stars. And then Sunday is the Stadium Series game against the Wild.
A very, very busy week.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it starts tonight with who?
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's exactly right. And Coach Q joins us now. Morning, Coach. How are you?
Great. Good morning.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Sweetie, right back at you. I didn't get you anything this year because I thought we've had a tradition of not getting each other anything that we should continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's continue that policy. I love it.
That's good. All right. So we're concerned about Hossa, but it looks like maybe a week. That sound comfortable to you?
A couple weeks, maybe.
Oh, maybe two. Okay. What, lower body, upper body?
Lower.
It was weird the way he slid into the board because it looked like maybe a hip pointer, like maybe he jammed his hip.
Well, we're not getting into exactly what happened, but it's it's not serious, and that was the most important thing. But we are going to miss a guy who plays the right way, a lot of important minutes, up front we've been a little bit light in certain areas of our game, more so puck possession, and he does that pretty well. So we got to get back to having the puck and making them defend a little bit more. But he does play the right way, and going to miss power play penalty killing. So some very important minutes here to be shared, and I look forward to see who's going to grab it and jump up.
Yeah, and here's the thing. That board that he hit has been removed and taken out for disciplinary action because the Blackhawks don't mess around. So I don't know if you heard, but we can't have that.
Okay.
All right, so who does step up? Who's going to get a shot to step up?
Well, we called up Vinny Hinestroza from the minors. Richard Panik might play in that spot tonight, but there's a lot of guys in the last couple of games. We've tried a couple of three, four, five guys in games when Panarin was out, so we missed obviously missed him for a couple of games. And in Hossa's spot, we'll try a couple of guys. Hopefully they nail it right off the bat. Try Tabo a little bit. He's a possibility. So we're looking forward to somebody season it, and then we still think we got balance throughout our lineup, and we try to keep some balance in there. And you can always double shift Kaner on his line and on Taser's spot if that's the case on a need basis.
So the Ducks game this weekend, really a good hockey game in a million different ways. Kaner gets a breakaway, and it's one of the few that he misses, and then a penalty, and so it goes in overtime. But, you know, Coach, the problem with winning 11 or 12 or 13 in a row is you go 500 for a stretch and it feels like a slump. This team is just, I don't know, I don't feel like you're far away from getting right back in another streak at all.
Well, it's one game. I know that the Dallas game was something that we weren't very happy with. We did some decent things last game. I thought Corey was great in the game, gave us a chance. They pressed hard at the end of the game, and I think they're very content to keep it close. And, you know, we're fortunate the last two times we played them going overtime, and this one too many men, and was in our net. But we feel that, the San Jose game, we had our moments, but we haven't played great in this three-game homestand to date, and I feel that there's another level of either having a puck or make them defend or more speed or more pace to our game. It's been a little bit light in this stretch, and at home here, we want to make sure that we get something on this homestand, and we got our dangerous team coming in here, Toronto, coming off a big road win in Vancouver. They'll be excited, so let's try to end it on a good way, and then we got a couple interesting days coming ahead this week.
Yeah, let's jump ahead a little bit, Joel, to the weekend. I know you've got the Rangers coming up Wednesday, and you've got a visit to the White House, so it's quite a week. But this will be the fourth outdoor game that you've coached on Sunday in Minnesota. And I wonder if there's anything that maybe you've learned from the experiences of the previous three and whether you approach these games any differently.
Good question. I think the thing is it's a fun setting. It's a fun environment. The excitement's there, and the players are all enthused about it. So, you don't want to take away any of that. And the preparation is it's still a meaningful game. We want to play the right way. And we had a tough loss in the Washington game. Had a great effort outdoor in the snow. And, there's been some good games and some memorable games along the way here. And I think that, Minnesota, with a coaching change this week, I'm sure they're looking forward to it. We'll see what happens. And we got a coach going in there that's familiar with us as well. So it's it makes for a great contest, knowing that that state and that area is so hockey-oriented that they've really targeted this weekend in this game. And so, but we don't want to get too much we don't want to change too much the mindset. Hey, let's play the right way. We played in a lot of big settings and a lot of big games. It's a big setting and it's a big game, but let's not change too much the way we play and the way we get excited about playing.
You're not going to jump in there in the alumni game on Saturday, are you?
No, but we got Jimmy going in there. He should be busy. Jimmy Waite's going to be the goalie, and him and Mary Bannerman are going to be in net. So Jimmy's been practicing and been getting ready, and he can't wait.
Do you miss time on the ice?
Do I miss playing the game?
Yeah.
This is a great extension to what we're doing here. But I love the game. I mean, it's the playing days are your most enjoyable parts of your career. And coaching is fun too. But the playing days are more fun.
I mean, I know you're skating around a little bit when you practice and stuff.
I miss that I never got an opportunity to play in an outdoor game. That's something that these guys are all fortunate and privileged to participate in them. And some fourth time, it'll be another great day.
Is there any coach in the NHL you'd like to check hard into the boards?
No, I don't get too wound up with the other guy. I don't.
I just thought maybe a guy that you played against.
Let's see.
Maybe a guy that you missed out on hitting hard back when you were playing? Just for fun, we're talking about here.
No, I know. We're having fun here, and I'm trying to think.
I'll send you a roster.
Okay, thank
I'll
you.
Send a list to everybody. By the way, you're getting tired of going to the what?
Many guys coaching now that I played against.
Yeah, I know. I know. Believe me. Yep. You getting tired of going to the White House? This is getting to be routine. I'm surprised they don't have an office for you.
We know where everything is now, though. The tours are, we kind of know where the rooms are and where things are and what to expect, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, because here's the thing. As a coach, I assume that you like the routine of game day, and this is a big deal, and obviously it's an honor to go to the White House. Everybody'd like to be in your position, but it does interrupt the routine, I would think, too, of the trip at least.
Well, we originally would have been coming home after the Ranger right. game, but we're heading to Washington. So it's not, and it's kind of, it fits perfectly in this week because it's a kind of a lighter week with some different type of events. So it's a, I think it'll be, you know, I think the timing and the fitting of going to the White House this year couldn't have been any better as far as knowing that I don't think there's any disruption and it looks a little bit like it belongs there that on that day.
That trip, yeah. We're pushing for the president to come see a Hawks game at the Madhouse before he's out of office because I don't think he's done that yet.
No, we should get that. We'll try to reinforce that this week. That might be the focus here on Thursday.
No, Lord knows he'd like to get out of Washington as much as possible, that nut farm. Coach, all right, so Toronto tonight, and as always I ask you for fans coming to the game, who's a couple of guys maybe that most people wouldn't be talking about that you're going to have an eye on their team?
They right now they're missing a lot of their top forwards. They just traded Phaneuf. But they got a very workmanlike team. They play with a purpose. It's all about checking. It's all about time and space. And they're ready to play a low-scoring game and try to frustrate you. But it's four lines of everybody doing the same thing. So that's what we expect tonight. All about puck battles, winning puck battles, simplicity, second effort, and try to win that type of way. Because that's the way they're going to play.
And as always, have a great time.
Thank you. You too.
All right. See you later, sweetie. 9:20, and it's a Coach Q, again, sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. Oh, did I tell you? Because I didn't get a chance to tell Coach Q. Mustache Night's coming.
When?
That's right here.
Yeah, Mustache Night is coming.
Soon?
Yeah.
Like the next?
Well, we've got an exciting announcement about Mustache Night.
Okay,
because
good.
It turns out Mustache Night is going to be a happening.
Oh.
It's going to be an event.
It's going to be like the biggest party.
I mean, I don't want to say right now, but maybe it's more than one night.
Oh.
Maybe it's a mustache festival. How about that?
Like Mustache-a-palooza?
Would you like that? Well, that's it. We have up our sleeve. All right. On Friday, it's 9:21. On Friday, Andre and I were at the auto show. Marissa Bailey, the lovely and talented Marissa Bailey from CBS2, was there as well.
Yes, she was.
She will join Andre to mock me in a moment.
No, we're not going to mock you.
Well, you should.
A little bit.
If you're looking forward to people mocking me, please stand by because it's coming up next on 720 WGN. I want to thank our hosts at Fifth Third Bank and fine people they are. They're the official bank of the Chicago Auto Show. And on Friday, they had a bunch of us out there to do a speed texting contest. And it's a cool game they invented where you can speed text. And if you were super, super slow, you'd get an award at a badge where you'd be molasses hands.
Butterfingers. Molasses hands.
Your turbo texter or super. Yeah. And Marissa Bailey, and I like Marissa a lot. She does a nice job on CBS, too.
She's great.
She's beautiful. She's fun.
Great reporter.
But she couldn't be a bigger competitive jerk when it comes to speed texting.
No, she is not. That's mean.
No, listen. At Marissa Bailey TV on social media. Good morning, Marissa. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. You know what? I take that as a compliment, Steve.
Yes.
There you go.
She laughed. She laughed and pointed at me.
She did.
Goes, look, here's what you don't do. Steve's the before picture for texters.
And then you know what? When you walked away and you turned your back, she did it again.
I don't doubt it. But congratulations. You killed it.
Oh, thanks. You know, you guys were kind. Andre, I got to tell you, though, you were right up there next to me. I mean, you and I were right next to each other.
We were close. You were really good. I admire you in so many ways. And now it's just another accolade for you. You were
great.
Awesome.
No, you're great. No, we're great.
Steve, I actually think that you might have been faster on a flip phone.
Well, that's just mean. I'm going to call Adele on her flip phone and tell her you said that.
Marissa, I thought you said on a Palm Pilot.
exactly.
Yeah. Well, I did. I brought in my Apple Newton, and they said it wasn't eligible for play.
It was fun, though. It was a good time. You know, it's always fun to see people and our colleagues out there in the media. And like I said that day afterwards, that it just confirmed that I probably text too much in my life, and it just confirmed that I probably need to get a hobby.
Well, didn't you tell us that your husband mocks you because you're sitting on the couch with your head down the majority of time you're at home?
Yes, he does. In fact, he'll have full conversations with me, and he'll ask me some off the wall question that I'll answer normally, and then he knows I'm not listening or paying attention. I've been putting time out for a while on that one, but it's just one of those things, you know. You got to get good at it, and Andre, of course, our job, you know, and when you're reporting, a half of your life is spent with your face and your phone, looking up emails and information, and texting with the station and such. So yeah. I think that's how I. My thumbs got so good there, Steve.
Your weekend co-anchor was there with me, right at the bottom of the list. Did you have any messages for him?
Well, that's no surprise that Mr. Ed Curran was slow. I think at one point he had his glasses around the brim of his nose, and he sat and threw the one finger punch. I mean, it was actually, I give you guys credit, because you came out knowing that you weren't the fastest turbo twiddlers or whatever they're called. I don't even know.
Oh, yeah, whatever they're called. Yeah, you've got it framed on your wall. Who are you kidding?
You killed it, Marissa.
Those guys are great.
Ed and I brought up the rear. But Micah, I got to tell you, Micah Mateer, our old Micah Mateer from Channel 9, she sucked a lot, too. She was pretty bad with us.
She was average, right, Marissa? She wasn't as bad as you guys. Yes.
I think she was complaining she had a manicure or something that was getting in the way.
Yes, she did. And she also had a problem initially with the capitalization, not realizing that you had to capitalize as well. And so I think that threw her off in the beginning. But, you know, she was hilarious. I mean, she was running commentary the whole time about how bad she was. Oh, I can't get it. What am I doing?
Now, if you go to the auto show and go to the Fifth Third Bank location, and by the way, you can go by the Chevy showcase, too. It's not far from there. And you go by, I think it's twice a day that they do this texter game. You can actually play the game.
It's actually a really fun game.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It's definitely cool.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's five. I know they do it definitely at 5:30 every day.
Is that what it is?
And you can, and you just go to the website, you download it to your phone, and you can sit there, and it just tells you how fast you are texting. I think, Andre, what was it? I think at one point I had 30 words per minute with a 94% accuracy or something.
Yeah, she was so fast. You were really fast, and the accuracy was key, too. Because, again, you had to go back and fix your mistakes.
Yeah, it's text versus text. TXT vs. TXT. TXT vs. TXT.com. And, by the way, I, at one point, had 3 words per minute and 1% accuracy. So I don't feel like I was that far behind you.
You were a great sport, wink, Marissa. Wink.
You really were.
Marissa, you guys are doing great stuff, and it's always great seeing you. And anytime you want to come by and you and Andrea mock me, you feel free.
So much. Great to see you guys as always. I'm
going to
go back to texting now. See you in a bit.
Later, Marissa. I'll bet you will.
We had a great time at the winner's after party.
What? There was an after party for winners?
Oh, no. I mean, that was.
I wondered where you went.
That was us.
We'll get to the big story in a moment on 720 WGN. On this President's Day, we think back to our founding fathers. And how we may have made a terrible mistake. Amy Cochran this weekend said, you know, if this Trump thing goes the way this Trump thing is apparently going, you should call Paul Coit and see if we can go back to London, go back to England, apologize, see what the criteria is. And Amy Cochran was right.
See what the criteria would be.
And that's why I bring in my friend Paul Coit, at Coity, C-O-Y-T-E-Y. On the road, headed somewhere. Where are you headed?
Dave, I just kind of pick up Ruby from a piano lesson, and we've just pulled into our house, and so we're sitting comfortably in the car.
America.
Hi, Ruby. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good. So nice to hear your voice. And thank you for letting us talk to your father for a moment, because, Paul, as you know, my daughter... My daughter brought up the idea, maybe it's time to apologize to England. We've had a nice run. Maybe it's time to head home. Would you take us back if Trump's elected?
Well, put it this way, 1776 is a long time ago, and we were waiting for the apology. It was about 1812, we thought it might come. Then a little bit later, about 1901, we were expecting the apology, still never came. So, you know, I don't know. What can you now do for us, do you think? I mean, we may be able to do some business here, but we could take you back. But, you know, why should we take you back now?
Well,
we've
got a lot of perfectly lovely people who could add to the economy, who could add to, you know, the science and technology sectors, who aren't very good at soccer, football, if you will. And frankly, our food is better.
Oh, do you really think so? Yeah, are you sure?
Oh, please.
You don't like sausage toad in the hole?
We don't really like bangers and mash.
I don't even know what he just said. Did he say there's a toad in the hole?
Sausage in the hole.
It's all the inflection. It's been toad in the hole. Your sausage in like a batter thing, but that doesn't matter. Yeah, we'd be more than happy to take you back. I mean, how serious are you about this?
Well, I think we're quite serious. You know, is a matter of you know, a fallback position. I mean, look, if the country comes to its senses,
I see, which is your fallback position now, Mister. I see. That's just in case.
It's kind of a just in case, but I think honesty is a good way to fully repair the relationship after that slight tear that it had in 1776. So I guess what I would ask of you, and consult Ruby on this, because I know how bright Ruby is, what criteria would you need for us to make the appropriate apology? I'm sure it'd have to be presented to Parliament and the Queen. Not now, Steve.
Yeah.
And then we could progress from there. And then maybe we could take this up at another time. But I just think that we need to have the discussion start early. Nothing moves quickly in politics. If it goes badly the rest of the year, we may need to move quickly, and we're going to need you to accept us. So maybe give it some thought on what you would need.
Okay, well, look, we've got a little problem with the EU here. We're not sure whether we're going to stay in Europe or come out of Europe. That could help us out there, because then it all depends whether you're going to be part of the Commonwealth, which was the former British Empire when we used to just overrun everywhere and take them over and call them our own, and then realize that we couldn't do that anymore. So they now call it the Commonwealth, which means we're just friends, or whether you would be part of the British Isles. Would you actually be part of the United Kingdom? Would it be the United Kingdom of Great Britain and the Americas, maybe? It all depends how part of us you're going to be. You know, do you want us to just rule you entirely again? Is that what you want? Because we do have an iron fist. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, no, I'm not too concerned about your fist. I'm not sure what the answer to that is specifically, other than the fact that we're just scared. We're very, very frightened about what's happening here.
Okay, fine. Well, listen, anything you need. Listen, Ruby, do you think we should take America on board, the United States, to be part of us again? Because I don't know whether you've done this in history, but we used to own them. Did you know that?
No.
They used to do everything we told them to do, and then they started getting a bit big for their boots, quite frankly, and then they took over. So what do you think? Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm very happy with that.
Ruby's really happy with that. You know, that's happy. So how do you feel?
And Ruby, I have to say that if this goes the way we're discussing, you'd be able to see your friend Amy again.
See, there you go. You could see Amy again as well.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
You'd almost have, like, the same passports and everything, which would be nice. And then maybe you could work in America, which at the moment you couldn't do. I mean, the fact that you're 10 doesn't make any difference, but you couldn't actually do that. Neither could I. Yeah, okay, we're in.
Right.
What do we have to do? Is it a Trump thing? Do we have to send him off to Argentina or something like that?
No. Listen, if we come back, Trump can stay here. You know, let the chips fall. But we got to work on a name. The United Kingdom of England and the States, England States, United.
Oh, I think I've got it. The United Kingdom of Great Britain and a little bit of America if they feel like it. How about that?
All right. That's a great working title. And by the way, we need to congratulate our friend Paul and our friends at the Tottenham Hotspur Football Club with a huge win yesterday. And who did you defeat yesterday?
Manchester City, who are the billionaires of soccer. And we haven't won the Premier League title since 1961. And for the first time, you never know, we may just do it. And listen, we have to thank you and the Chicago Spurs for your support, because I think that's the reason it's happening right now.
They're having a tremendous year, a huge year.
Yeah.
Ruby, we love you, and we love your family. And Paul, thank you for this reasonably optimistic viewpoint that we can come home.
Listen, the lines of contact are open. I think we can do something with this. We would like you to be part of us again. And 1776, believe me, it will only take us a good couple of years to forget it, and then we'll sweep it under the table.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. No.
She
no,
is adorable.
Thank you. Thank you. Ruby is...
She's not. I am adorable. She's not adorable.
No, she is
adorable.
Yes.
I'm just Ruby.
Yeah, you go.
How great is she?
I love her. Let's get her citizenship here.
Yes.
And then she can run for something. Not
no,
president,
I don't
obviously.
Want her. I don't want her or any of my family anywhere near. She's extended family. I don't want her or any of my family anywhere near Trump.
Oh, she cracks me up.
As a matter of fact,
adorable.
Any of these candidates.
She could babysit for Abigail.
Adorable.
She could. She'd love that.
Yeah. Cutie.
She's a great kid, too. They both are. You know, Paul's little boy's tremendous, too. Joe's great.
He was in the car with him. He's probably already at school.
No, you would have heard Joe. Yeah. It's 9:48. We're back with more before we get to Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. All right, so here's the way it's going to work, Kev. I will ask the listener. I'll just pop these people on the phone. I got Wally and Mike and Steve and Roger and Sam. I'll pop them on. I'll ask them a question, and if they win, we'll give them prizes. If they don't, they have to give me something.
Perfect.
Okay?
Like it.
Let's start from Wally with Long Grove. Good morning, Wally. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Steve. I'm doing well, thanks.
Wally, here's my question. Who is the richest president ever elected? The richest president?
Kennedy.
Did you say George Washington?
George Washington.
That's correct. George Washington was the richest president ever elected with his assets in today's dollars worth $500 million. I'm so glad you knew that.
Thank you, Steve.
You got yourself a ChevyDriveChicago.com WGN Radio stainless steel travel mug and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Hold the line. Let's move on to Mike from Blue Island. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Can you tell me the president who was famous for skinny dipping during his presidency? He had an early morning skinny dip that he loved to do.
Johnson.
Did you say John Quincy Adams?
Yes, I did.
John Quincy Adams is correct. That's amazing.
They can all be politicians.
I picked that one right off the top.
That is incredible. I have a gift certificate for you to Glenwood Oaks Rib and Chop House in Glenwood. The restaurant of choice since 1974. Hold the line. Aren't they doing great so far?
Oh, they are doing just incredible.
Roll. Incredible. Let's go to Steve in Worth. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Good. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Can you tell me the president who was the fattest or who the president who weighed the least ever to occupy the White House?
The heaviest would be William Howard Taft.
That's correct. And for a bonus prize, do you know who the lightest president ever was?
The early one. Madison, maybe?
Wow! Tremendous! Huh. James Madison weighed less than the average teenage girl. He was 5'1" tall and weighed 94 pounds.
Yeah, they didn't they didn't have a lot of good food back then.
How about that?
They didn't have additives or preservatives.
That is absolutely tremendous. I have tickets to see Crystal Bauer Sox of American Idol fame at the Arcata for you. Tickets at oshows.com or you can call them up at 888-695-0888. And also, one of those ChevyDriveChicago.com prize packs as well from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevy dealers. Don't forget ChevyDriveChicago.com. Great links for the auto show as well. Have I got time for one more?
One more, yeah.
One more. Let me go to... Who's been on hold longer?
Roger.
Okay. And give Sam something for holding on as well. Good morning, Roger. How you doing?
Oh, very good. Stever, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Let's see. Do you know which president was drunk during his inauguration?
Oh, hell, that had to be Roosevelt. Pick either one.
You know what? That's incorrect, but I'm amused that you find yourself amusing. You're a big winner. Give him some prizes.
Who was
the actual
Johnson?
Drunk president was Andrew Johnson.
I knew it.
Andrew Johnson.
Got hammered.
Yeah. That's right. Andrew Johnson. That was actually Andrew Johnson at his inauguration.
He was the one who got drunk and fought in the duel, remember?
Uh-huh. But he was drunk before his inauguration, and he needed some help to stand up to make his speech, which he cut short. It's 9:57. We're back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Steve.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, it's the day after Valentine's Day.
What?
That's right.
Oh,
Valentine's Day was yesterday, Steve.
I've
you
made.
Needed to buy something for
Gosh,
somebody.
Darn it.
That's all right. Next year. You got another year.
How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Really good. Thank you for asking.
Okay. What else happened?
That's it.
What's on the show today? That's what you usually
things.
Ask. You ask what's on the show.
No, they don't like when I ask them what's on the show today, so I was looking for something else.
Can I just say as
Bill,
a start...
Bill, what's your favorite color?
My favorite color is aquamarine. You know that. You've already known that. I was so offended today...
What?
...as a Star Trek fan because you had William Shatner on Captain James Tiberius Kirk, and yet the intro was from Star Trek The Next Generation with Jean-Luc Picard.
To the bridge.
Very upsetting.
That is totally wrong.
Very upsetting.
Well, maybe the two you need to get out more.
And Shatner texted me right after the interview.
I doubt that he would have been able to do that, actually, at 84.
While driving.
It took a long time.
To Juliet.
I got a couple letters
sure
at a time.
Fax you?
He may have faxed me. I don't know. Okay. He sent a courier to my home with a note that said...
On a horse?
Yes.
And he said, the British are coming?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
It was very offensive.
As is the case, for all things that I offend you, please contact Kevin at a later time.
All right.
All right, you guys have a good show. I'm leaving.